Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, episode 155. Let's try this again. We had, I had bad technical difficulties yesterday, ladies and gentlemen. And it's a shame because I was in a great mood and I had a really good show on tap. And yeah, didn't happen. But alas, I was going to kind of try to maybe replicate that same show and kind of go back and do the same show again. And I will hit some of the same stuff over the course of the next few shows. But it was a big, boisterous, funny show, and I am not in a big, boisterous, funny mood. I'm in a pretty bad mood, actually. I don't have enough, so my moods are boisterous and funny and in a good mood, boisterous and ranty, just plain ranty, and then too, I don't know how to say it. I'm too melancholy to rant today. I don't have enough energy to rant. I'm in a mood where I'm just like, oh man, really? Come on. And it's like, I don't know. So, partially just cause I had kind of insomnia last night. I just didn't sleep well. You're going to hear a lot of coffee slurps on this episode. I apologize in advance. You can console yourself with my increased coherence as my, caffeine intake, rises. So does my coherency. It's commensurate. Is that the word for it? No, it's not commensurate. It's, well, it's relative, but what's that? Oh, see, I haven't had enough caffeine to remember mathematical terms from reading the great books. And so anyway, I did have one. I'm going to tell a funny anecdote just so to get myself in a little better mood. Okay, so obviously one of the main reasons I'm in a horrible mood is Ted Cruz quit last night. And I'm still not sure what's going on. I don't know why he did that. I haven't had a chance. I just didn't have enough energy to go look at the delegate forecast and realize, you know, maybe he does just sees the writing on the wall. Maybe there's no way to stop Trump from getting the nomination on the first vote. Maybe that it's just over. And if that's the case, then I get it. There's no reason to waste anybody's money. There's no reason to, you know, keep going along if there's nothing that can be done. Anyway, so I am just like kind of distraught that we've gotten, I mean, part of what I did on the show, was going to happen yesterday if you had got to hear it because of this, remember, okay, you long-term listeners, remember the demonic robot aliens? Remember the static, weird robotic aliens that invaded a podcast early on? They're back. And I'm starting to wonder if it's not like a seasonal thing with like static or something. And I'm going to have to figure out some kind of another microphone or something like that. So, but we've doubled up on the technology today to make sure that you can hear this. So, anyway, so I was going to talk about the video that I saw on Twitter where Ted Cruz unadvisedly, admittedly, walked across the street and tried to actually talk rationally to some Trump supporters. And, you know, it was literally, it looked like a combination of like the playground, like bullies and like idiots on a playground when you're trying to talk to them when you're a kid, or that opening scene when they get unfrozen in Idiocracy, when they all speak in these real short sentences and this real crude slang and stuff, and he's speaking like a normal, like just kind of working class dumb guy from our century, and they're going, "You sound like a fag. You're dumb." I mean, it's like they're just like yelling at him and just like calling him names. I mean, it's literally, it was like that. They were just shouting slogans. And I went on. So I'm going to end up probably talking about our political discourse and all that. So, but for now, I want to tell a funny anecdote and get me in a good mood. So I was at Whole Foods a while ago, getting a coffee and some food to eat, and on my way down to the studio, and there was this beautiful young mom, you know, probably like in her mid-30s, maybe early 40s, you know, and a little boy in the cart. That little boy is probably like 2, you know, old enough to talk in a way that you can understand what he's saying pretty well, but not old enough to have figured out kind of always what's appropriate to say. And so I come walking by him, and he's looking at me and kind of makes eye contact and kind of smiles, and I kind of smile back at the little guy, you know. And I go over to get a to-go cup, and I start filling up my coffee. And the little boy goes, Mommy, that man has a big fat tummy. And if you're new to the show, I am a man of substance, and I carry a lot of weight around this town, you know. I carry a lot of weight around everywhere, but I have a belly, you know, I have some substance out in front of me. So this little guy is like, Mommy, he's got a big fat tummy. And she's just like, oh, she goes, honey, no, we don't say things like that. And he could tell in his mind, there is no judgment about this. He doesn't know that's bad. He doesn't know that there's any, he has no reference to societal's views on obesity or no idea whatsoever. Right. And, goodness. So he says, but Mommy, he does have a fat tummy. And she's like, well, honey, we don't say things like that. That's not nice or something. And she's trying not to make eye contact with me, right? Because she doesn't want to acknowledge that it's me that her child is talking about. Meanwhile, I am cracking up filling my coffee, and she can see me cracking up. So she knows that I know that her child is making running commentary on the size of my tummy. And so I finally got my coffee done, put the cap on it, and turned around, and I kind of walked over, and he was looking right at me like, oh, the fat guy is coming. You know, I said, you know, it's totally fine. My best friend in California, his kids are like obsessed with my belly. They think, and it's true. Open Justin Schneer's kids are just like, they're constantly wanting to sit on my lap and poke my belly. They're wanting to look at the boys when they were younger would walk up to me and like try to pick it up. You know, they're just like, yeah, I mean, I don't have like I don't need a wheelbarrow in front of me, but I have a belly. There's no doubt. I admit, I'm not in any denial about this fact. I have in fact a belly, but I told her, I said, you know, my kid, and then it's funny because, you know, my best friend's little kids, it's like they get mad when they hear me talking about losing weight. They get mad. They're like, are you not gonna have a belly when you come back? They're like, because I see them about every 6 months or so, and they're just fascinated. They're just like, if they get mad if I want to lose weight, they're like, no, you won't be the same, we love you like this, you know. They're so, I wasn't offended by the little guy at all, but so I went over and tried to demortify his poor mom. And his mom was really pretty too. So I'm assuming his dad probably doesn't have a belly like me. So he's just never seen, maybe he just hasn't ever seen that. She was all in workout gear and stuff. Maybe he's from a family of nothing but very fit, worky, outy people, you know? So it's good for him to know that there's us, you know, men of substance out here in the world. But, so there you go. The existential, the non-judgmental existential observations of a toddler guiding us all this morning. What would that toddler say about the American political process right now and what's going on? I think he would say, wow, those guys are like really, really childish. They should grow up like me. I think that's where they're at. At least if we showed him some Trump supporters, it just seems like our, in case you haven't figured out, I have no real serious definite plan for the show today. I'm just kind of in exasperated, exhausted, ranty, non-boisterous ranty mode today. It seems like we have just decided to go to the fringes. You've got, or at least it seems like it, if you look at the breakdown of the four candidates, it seems like we got the far left, and it used to be you had like the far right, but Trump isn't really, I mean, part of his policy is really right wing. He's just a demagogue. I mean, the guy doesn't understand how the political process works. I think he just wants to be king or something. He's just going to come in and do all this stuff. Maybe he's just taking for granted the direction that both Bush and Obama have set forth in the increased influence and power of the executive branch. Maybe he just assumes he's just going to be able to amplify that up and become a king. But, you know, but then you've got, you know, what used to be considered the right wing in the sense of kind of this neo-libertarian, really small government, hearkening back to the founding principles, originist constitutional kind of view in Ted Cruz. And then you've just got a good old Clinton, you know, which, you know, I'm going to do something when we get back from the break. I'm going to do something that you don't hear very often. I'm going to defend Hillary Clinton. So let's go to the break. You're listening to The Counterposition. I am your host, Andrew Whaley. You know you gotta help me out,
yeah. Redbox Media invites you to Bless the Yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com. And when-
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, so I promised something you would rarely ever hear on this show, and that's I'm going to defend Hillary Clinton on something. So I saw an article on the internet from a conservative side, and it was lambasting Hillary Clinton for pandering, or kind of like, you know, trying to reach too far and pander to the black vote, the urban black vote, by going on, she was on a talk show, I think it was in Atlanta. And they were talking to her and talking, and I didn't hear the context. I didn't read all the context of the, but I could tell exactly what was going on by the little bit that I skimmed. She said, she jokingly said, I carry hot sauce in my purse. And the right-wing pundits that were writing this article were like, this is just ridiculous. That's the basest, most stereotypical reach of trying, you know, and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, I mean, these guys clearly don't know anything about pop culture. They're not paying attention to what's going on in pop culture. And I get that. But if you're going to play in that political commentary world, as you can see with Donald Trump, I mean, entertainment world has become political world and vice versa, right? So that is a really prominent lyric in, not this last one, but the one before, the kind of controversial Beyonce video, where she's talking about being a Bama. And one of the main lyrics that comes around is I got hot sauce in my purse, right? Hillary Clinton, in fact, does carry chili peppers and hot sauce all the time, because I heard her interviewed earlier on in the campaign, and she was talking about how hard it is to just not all this traveling and being exposed to everything under the sun. It's hard not to just get, almost everybody ends up with a cold or getting sick really bad when they're out running for president. And they asked her, you know, what have you learned about this trip, you know? And she said that a friend of hers had turned her on to eating a lot of chili peppers and hot sauce and dry. She has these little dried jalapenos she puts on stuff and everything, and that actually helps her immune system. Right. So she literally carries dried jalapenos and she carries hot sauce in her purse. Now, any of you TAC listeners out there will remember that our beloved Father Bart Della Torre, when he was the chaplain at TAC, a man who was, I think, like deep in his 70s, maybe in his early, I mean, he in his 80s, and he looked like he was like 50, and he hiked. And I mean, the guy was like the healthiest, youngest man for his age I've ever seen in my life. Oh, I could get distracted and tell some Bart Della Torre stories. But I love Bart Della Torre. I should reconnect with him. Father Bart, pray for us. Well, he's not dead. I'm saying pray for us. In case he hears this, you know. He's in Mexico, out in the middle of nowhere, from what I understand. Anyway, so he used to eat these dried jalapenos, and he told me one time that this was the secret to, this was the fountain of youth. I mean, this was his secret for staying so healthy and young all the time, right? So so that's why I remembered this story on NPR so vividly, because she described the exact same dried jalapenos, and I thought, oh, you know what? Maybe I should look into that. I like jalapenos, and I'm, you know, getting older. Maybe I should start eating some of those. So I remembered that Hillary Clinton did that. So here's this context where she literally does carry hot sauce in her purse, and she probably opened up her purse and showed it to him. But ironically, there was just a prominent lyric in a Beyonce video, and she was on a hip hop station when she did the, and so there was snickers and kind of, they called it snickers and uncomfortable laughter. They're just probably laughing at the old white lady kind of trying, making a joke about, you know, being cool like Beyonce because she has hot sauce in her purse. But, and so why would I go for 5 minutes defending Hillary Clinton when I think that she's probably a really horrible human being? Because that's how we get seen as being petty and just out of touch. When we turn everything into something to be devoured as a political animal and treat everything as politics, and just, I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm not going to make fun of, you know, Donald Trump's hair, because I'm not going to waste my time talking about Hitler's mustache. He started the Holocaust. It's like, I mean, I think there's some seriously troubling things about Donald Trump and his view of the American government. I think he could, in fact, be a real bona fide tyrant if he got elected, if he governed the way he's ran. Now, there's a giant question, but I'm not going to jump on and make fun of the fact that Hillary Clinton has hot sauce in her purse, because there's 15,000 other really serious things that need to be spoken of when it comes to Hillary Clinton, like Benghazi and like this email thing and like every other crazy thing with the Clintons for all these years. And the fact that both with the Bushes and with the Clintons, seemingly we have this kind of a penchant for oligarchy in our society, which I kept saying when Jeb was running, I'm like, I don't care if Jeb is the Messiah. I'm not voting for another Bush. There should not be that many people from the same family running our country. I don't care if he's the best candidate that has ever lived. I'm just not going to vote for him. I don't want that's. I'm anti-oligarchy. So anyway, there's something you won't hear very often. Me on the counter position defending Hillary Clinton and something she said on the trail, but because when there's a question, what are we going to do about Hillary? I mean, if I got Trump versus Hillary, I think I'm going to probably have to choose Hillary. I mean, why? Because the devil, you know. I mean, we know how to, you know, get some backlash, kind of hold or take some more of the Congress, and, you know, push hard and keep someone in check a little bit. Now, with the executive powers that were kind of expanded and the expectation of executive powers expanding, thank you very much, Mr. Bush, that Obama inherited and has now increased, that might not be as easy. But I'm just saying we know how to endure a Clinton in this country. And quite honestly, man, looking at the current batch, the current options right now, dude, I'd take Bill back. It's like, that's how bad it's got. I miss Bill. I mean, Bill knew when to, Bill arguably at least governed as a, Bill was a decent moderate Republican president. Now it was mostly from him giving in on stuff, but that was back when the executive branch was kind of still in its place in the system of checks and balances. Republicans actually knew how to fight and play their card and push for compromise. And the president, who was a Democrat, knew how to compromise and even use compromise as kind of cover for stuff that he probably thought was a good idea, you know, in hindsight with what he said, you know, since then. But at the time, maybe it wasn't politically expedient to support, you know. I think, you know, I'm not a big fan of that era in America in the sense of what happened governmentally, but compared to the weird apocalypse that could be Donald Trump or this stranger, more controlling, you know, power behind the throne and getting on the throne that is the Hillary Clinton campaign. I'd take Bill. I would honestly take Bill Clinton in this place. So, yeah, I admit it. I'm rambling about politics today. Normally I'm rambling about things more interesting than politics, but, I'm literally distraught. And why am I distraught? Because we have people that I don't like as candidates. Okay, kind of, yeah. It's just that ever since I've been politically aware in any way, shape, or form in voting, I have been voting for the same guy. His name is Lester. He's Lester. His last name is Of Two Evils. So I've been voting for the Lester of Two Evils ever since I became politically active. And I'm just super tired of it. I'm really, really tired of it. I would really, really like to see a nice, normal, relatable human being that is not a lawyer, that is not a political animal, that is not, you know, has not spent the last, you know, however long in that weird political legal culture, that actually understands what our government was set up as, that actually understands our Constitution, that actually has some kind of a dedication to our founding principles, but at the same time also has kind of a bigger understanding of human rights and the dignity of the human person, and it doesn't just, you know, scapegoat the poor for everything. And heaven forbid has something like a soul. I mean, I get these guys that I kind of agree with on paper. Then when you see them in public, there was a meme going around of Carly Fiorina and I like Carly Fiorina for the most part. I was kind of rooting for her and Ted Cruz. And the meme said, these human suits feel itchy. And it's like, that's kind of the feel you get from these political beings, so to speak. But anyway, let's go to the break. We'll be back in just a second. You're listening to The Counterposition.
Redbox Media invites you to Bless the Yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, so we are talking about my exasperation with the political scene. As we went to the break, I saw this meme that had, I saw two memes. I had one meme that had Carly Fiorina and Ted Cruz standing there, and he was saying to her, these human suits feel itchy. And okay, that's a kind of a cheap shot. I think that just because someone's kind of nerdy and a little, you know, socially awkward or whatever, but there's another meme that showed this kept replaying account where he was trying to grab Carly Fiorina's hand and then put it up in the air and kind of like a we're together on this kind of gesture, right? And they can't figure out what to do with their fingers, and they're all awkward about whose hand's going to be on top. And it's just like, it looked like when like some dorky white guy tries to shake hands with some kind of cool person and they're trying to do like something other than the straightforward 1953 two white men saying, nice to meet you, sir, general vanilla handshake, you know, and that person doesn't know what to do, and they just don't, that their hands kind of fumble, or like when you see two kind of awkward people trying to give a high five and it kind of doesn't work, you know, it looked like that. I was just like, wow, you just probably don't have any rhythm, do you? You just don't, do you, you just, you don't have any rhythm at all, do you? You just don't have any coordination or any rhythm, do you, Mr. Cruz? But he's the best guy up there. He was actually a really intelligent guy once I started finally listening to him. Once I got past kind of my own little high school kind of stereotypeness and started actually listening to what the man said and looking at what he had done and what he'd opposed and who he'd opposed in the Congress, I've watched a few of his speeches and watched that interview with Robert George, and I was like, you know, I can get behind this guy. This is a guy that I greatly agree with, that on a lot of things, that just happens to be a weird political animal that's really awkward, you know, okay, and just has a strange kind of smarmy look about him. You know, I mean, they might look at me and go, he just looks like a big glutton of a man. He's a big fat guy. And his hair looks greasy because he puts gel in it. And I'm like, okay, well, yeah, given. Perceptions, you know, are not always true, right? But I don't know. I think we're going to start designing our next candidate, because I think we're going to lose this time. We're just going to lose. I think the best we're going to be able to do is to send a message with a third party candidate, watch a Democrat win, and then go back to the woodshed and then the lab and start working on a new candidate. And the candidate that I want, I'm going to give you my wish list. I want a pro-business candidate. I want a candidate from the world of business, preferably with a liberal arts degree, which there's a ton of people out there. There's been articles written about how a philosophy major is actually valuable in Silicon Valley now. So I want someone who is from the business world, but from maybe like tech, like someone who did a startup earlier, or some, you know, in the 90s and has kind of taken a few companies through funding, or someone who understands the modern business landscape and understands maybe so they grew up in a family that owned a small business. I want someone who understands the modern big tech landscape and all that, but who has a heart for and understands small business, who has a degree in liberal arts, preferably great books. No, I am not volunteering for the record. This is not, I'm not describing me. I fit two of those things, and I have certainly been in small business and read a lot of Fast Company, but I would be a horrible president, and I would never make it. But someone who understands reason I'm saying liberal arts degree or a classical degree would be classics would be okay. Just someone who understands the underlying principles. Also, someone from the business world who has a background in liberal arts would be someone who could understand how principles are applied in projects and become concrete, and they would also know how to argue without fighting. And I think we need to learn how to argue without fighting. I think we need to learn how to disagree, put our positions on the table, make an argument for the underlying principles and reasoning underneath them and behind them, and then set them forth in the public sphere in a real serious way, without turning in with real nuance and understanding, in a way that doesn't just turn into a bunch of shouting. I think that that really, really needs to happen. Beyond that, I mean, okay, yeah, I would love it if the guy was a Catholic. Why? Because I want a theocracy and I want my guy that believes in the same book as I do in control. No, but I think that, well, I think Catholicism is true. I want a Christian man as a president. I think the Catholicism is the truest form of Christianity. So I would want a Catholic if I could get one, or at least someone who was steeped in both that. What you get when you get an intelligent Catholic is you get someone who understands that 3,000-year-old natural law tradition that comes up from pre-Aristotle all the way to, you know, the current day. And that through Locke, admittedly, but also through St. Robert Bellarmine and a few non-Lockean, kind of more direct, through back through Aquinas and that, you have an influence of that natural law view heavily, heavily on America's founding. And so having an understanding of natural law principles would give him the ability to kind of understand the underlying principles and presuppositions regarding our republic and how it was founded, right? But the other thing, the reason I would want a Catholic, is that I think that increasingly, both on the realm of economics and on the realm of a lot of different things, on the realm of ecology and conservation, on the realm of marriage and family and the purpose and the end of the family and all that, I think that Catholic doctrine, especially Catholic social doctrine, you know, from Rerum Novarum, that's hard to say today, from Rerum Novarum all the way through Laudato Si, I think you see a fairly coherent, forward-thinking, balanced, clear understanding of how to enact the common good with the dignity of the human person and the role of the family, all in the context of our creation and all of us having to make a living in a way commensurate with the human person. You see that really laid out beautifully, evolving in different emphases and different times and stuff, but you see that in Catholic social doctrine. And an educated, faithful Catholic man would understand that. And I think that the deep commitment to the common good and the pull of solidarity would allow him to speak with and understand a lot of the motives of a guy like Bernie Sanders and the more activist left. But at the same time, the emphasis on subsidiarity really, really, really plays well with our founding and the kind of the freedom and responsibility that's not license, but real liberty that is present in our Constitution, especially when read in light of the Declaration of Independence as a hermeneutic on it, as a lens through which to read it. I'm using big words today because I'm in a bad mood. I use big words when I'm in a bad mood. Anyways, there's my wish list. Now, beyond that, if he could be, you know, 55 or under, maybe 50 or under, in decent shape, not bad looking, maybe plays some basketball or something. Heaven forbid was in a band in college or something, you know, something that is other than a pasty white dude who sat around arguing about politics wearing a blazer. Just like, I just want a nice normal guy. A guy who like skateboarded or played in a band or played some basketball or something. Someone who knows how to give a high five, that doesn't fumble a handshake because he doesn't have rhythm or instinct in this body. I want a nice, normal human being. I've held off from making fun of a couple of these guys because I was wanting to support them. But you know, Ted, when you quit, I admire you. But when you quit, you made yourself fair game for me to make fun of how awkward you are, because you can't be elected now because you quit. So I just think that there's what I want. There's a way more detail I could go into, but so far that is my wish list for our next candidate. There you go. I have no idea where this show's going today. Oh, just too distraught to be focused. Anyway, all right. Let's. I'm trying to get better on these breaks so you don't have to listen to me talk while there's music over the top of me. Let's go. And I go a little long. So let's go to the break. You're listening to The Counter Position. I am your host, Andrew Wayland.
Redbox Media invites you to Bless the Yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Redbox Media. All right, the final lap. Here we go. We're exhausted. We're going around that final lap of the open mile here. How many times have I griped about running the open mile on the fourth segment? At least 10, I think. All right. Now, for my final segment, I was going to do this yesterday if we didn't have tech problems, but... Oh, alas, I did. So I want to look at how have we gotten where we are? And I think that how we've gotten, okay, there's been, okay, let's talk about, there's the big sweep. And yes, we had industrialization, then the information revolution, the management revolution, the sexual revolution. All these people, you know, all the presuppositions in basic society, whether you were religious or not, there were certain ways that you acted and lived, you know, that just kind of fell apart and all this. And so all these presuppositions that people just kind of held on faith, either explicitly or kind of implicitly, because, you know, it's the West, we're America, it's all, you know, God and apple pie and baseball, and we're Christians, right? I mean, it's like, you know, that kind of started falling apart, right? And so, but I think in the modern world, the real thing to point towards, I want to go to the more specific, like what has happened in the last 15 years or so. What has happened in the last 5 to 10 that could allow someone like Donald Trump to get the nomination for the Republican Party? And what, and someone like Bernie Sanders, who can say all day long that his democratic socialism has nothing to do with actual Stalinist socialism, but he has a past with the Socialist Workers Party or something like that. No one's talking about that. Like, I don't know why Clinton hasn't put this out more, but I mean, if you dig in Bernie Sanders' past, he has some actual socialism that he says he doesn't have. He's got some of that in his past. Go Google it. He's there. But how is he getting that much steam? How do we have a quasi-socialist, a good old fashioned Machiavellian Clinton, a really awkward, strange constitutionalist, and a reality TV mogul who literally owns beauty pageants and who brands water with his name? This is a weird guy with a bunch of failed businesses and bankruptcies that still has created a brand of being this great successful businessman, which, as best I can understand, his dad was crazy rich and he inherited a bunch of money. And there's been times when his dad has pumped a bunch of money into his ventures to keep it going and stuff. But so it's not like he's not, Donald Trump isn't the pull yourself up by your own bootstraps, you know, American story that we love, where he was the son of a Milwaukee plumber that, you know, started this little sandwich shop or whatever, and now it's a chain all over the world. No, it's not that we love that story, but that's not the Donald Trump story. I mean, so how did we get to where a guy using the techniques of promoting reality television could get a bunch of supposedly conservative people to support a candidate that supports the single payer system, that was pro-choice most of his life, and that can't quote a single Bible verse, who says he's never asked forgiveness or repented for anything in his life, and evangelicals are lining up behind the guy. It's like, and I know, I get it. I've read some of the articles. When you really get off the record and you interview these guys, a lot of them are blue collar guys that feel deeply disenfranchised and deeply usurped by illegal labor in basic trades and manufacturing jobs and in skilled trades and stuff. And they've influenced the culture around them. So they keep saying, I don't care. He could say, we want to take old people and turn them into baby food. I don't care. Build a wall. If he will build a wall and control our immigration, then I will vote for him. It's kind of the opposite of it's the new version of the single issue voter. Used to be that, abortion was the single issue that everyone based their voting on. And I think a reaction to immigration and its economic effect has become the new single issue for a big block of America. And they have started a movement and then just kind of christened Donald Trump as the face of their movement. Now, that being said, I want to go back to the first segment, and I saw Ted Cruz walked across the street unadvisedly to a bunch of guys holding signs saying Trump, make America great again, and tried to talk to them with the cameras rolling. And it sounded like a cross between the playground and a few scenes in the movie Idiocracy, which, I mean, was shocking. Absolutely shocking. Just how base and weird. Not that what they were saying was so rude, or that they were just spouting slogans. They were just spouting taglines. I mean, he would say, Ted Cruz said, and we need to ask one important question. The guy's like, are you from Canada? Hey, where's your Goldman Sachs jacket at? We know your wife works for him. Mike Trump, woo. You know, we're going to build that wall, build a wall. I mean, they're just literally, their idea of dialogue was literally to shout bullet points and slogans over a man trying to make reasoned conversation. Now, it was stupid to walk over there and try to talk to him. You don't try to let the cameras roll while you talk to bullies. It's just, that's idiotic. That was a dumb move on Ted's part. Maybe he knew that he was down, and the only thing that could turn it would be if he could score some big hit and some points and get a Trump guy to agree with him on video. Maybe it would go viral, and maybe it would sway the vote just a few percent or something. I don't know what he was thinking. But I just asked myself, I'm like, God, how have we gotten here where we have this Trump just weird caricature, stereotype view of reality, and the view that just shouting slogans and bullet points is dialogue, and then this overreaction to it on the far left where we've just turned anyone who's in business on any kind of level into some kind of boogeyman. And how did this happen? And the more I thought about it, I'm like, you know what? I'm laying it right at the feet of Fox News and the other kind of, you know, right wing, you know, screamy slogan, screamy black and white on every issue, bullet point media, but kind of typified by an aspect of Drudge, and especially Fox News. And it's like, well, how would you see? I remember watching Sean Hannity debate a guy about the role of Christianity in America, and he made an argument because I think it was Rhode Island, like the federal government had paid for a priest for the community in Rhode Island, I think it was. And then this man turned around and scored a point by saying, and the next year after that was decided, here's a letter from the man who made that decision saying that he regretted that decision and that was not proper for the separation of church and state or whatever. I don't know, whatever it was, but he scored a point and showed Sean Hannity wrong. Hannity just kept screaming his point over and over again. And this guy would make a different argument and he would just say the same thing again louder. That was like in the late 90s, I think. Early 2000, maybe. I mean, it was like, I was in school at Thomas Aquinas College. So I think it was like right before, right after 9/11. And so you look at how these Trump supporters act and what they think dialogue is. You want to know what that's like? Just go watch O'Reilly. Just go watch Hannity. Just turn on Fox News and you will see people yelling and screaming slogans and bullet points and calling that dialogue and just shouting each other down. They think that is how politics works. And Fox and the right wing have mocked the concept of nuance. They've made fun of that as being liberal and wishy-washy, and everything has to be black and white and super clear and digestible down to a bullet point and able to be shouted over the top of someone else. And we have got to just plain disavow that as the mode of the right wing or the mode of the Republican Party, the mode of conservatism in America. That is not what conservatism used to be, and it has to stop being that now. Anyway, that's all I got. Let's pull the plug, pop the cork on another episode of The Counterposition. Hopefully not on our country. See you next time.